Hi, it's John Ross Bowie from Netflix's Feel Good. You are listening to Spoiler Country.
Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
If you're speechless at the Big Bang, you're not alone. Welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenneth Gregan. That is the Universal Mr. Horsley. And today on the show, well, it's John Ross Bowie, isn't it?
It is, man. He plays Kripke on the show, and he's a hilarious character, man.
Yeah, some of the most classic episodes involve Bowie Kripke. And
yep.
And he's funny because he speaks with the speech impediment, and John's going to talk about John Ross, not this John, but the other John. He's going to talk about how that came about in the interview, and it's pretty funny. I'll give you a heads up. He was supposed to be trying to do a liquid L like Tom Brokaw used to do, and when he opened his mouth, Kripke came out.
That's hilarious.
So they kept it. And what's even more funny for me is – I had that speech impediment when I was a little kid. Yeah. I sounded just like Barry Kripke. And I had to go through speech therapy, the whole nine yards. And we talk about that. This was a lot of fun. And he's an everyday guy. He's an everyday's man. You know what I mean? And we talk about a lot of stuff, and it's kind of funny. At the very beginning, he's going to correct me on how I say his name, right? Because I said John Ross Bowie.
Right, which is what I would have thought too.
Yeah. He goes, no, it's I'm going to correct you. He goes, I never do this, but if we're going to be here for a while, it's Bowie. And I thought he was fucking with me, like, because of Barry Kripke. You know what I mean? Right. So when you hear me laughing when he says it, I was like, that's hilarious, da 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 da. And I quickly realized, oh, no, he's serious. And I was like, oh, damn it.
Oh, man. And it's funny. He said he talked to me. He listens to our WandaVision episodes, right?
Yeah, he's a fan of the show, which is awesome. So I'm sure he'll hear this.
Which is hilarious because I want to point out that in the last episode, Casey literally said he doesn't like the Big Bang Theory.
I know, which I don't understand. I told Casey, I said, well, who didn't hug you?
Right.
Like, to me, it's like, I don't know. I can get some people that could get, like, my mom would not be a fan of the show.
Right, right.
They talk about sex too much. They're way too liberal about a lot of things. But honestly, the argument that Casey has is bullshit. It's like,
right.
What are you talking about? It's just the same old trope. Not really. I mean, it's a 30-minute sitcom, so they all have a lot of similar tropes.
Yeah.
But you can't be on for 12 years and be the same old, same old.
Right, right. And people like to bitch about, you know, it's like the dumb person, smart person show or whatever. But it's like, so what?
Yeah.
It's not going to sit and do like actual 100% science all the time. It's going to, you know, for scientists, it's a sitcom show for the everyday person. We should be happy that there was a show on TV for 12 years that touched on science and pop culture and
comic books
smart.
And they were talking about comic books before it was the nerdy, cool thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the show. I think it's hilarious.
I love it. I told him it's one of my go-to shows when I'm sick.
Yeah.
It's that one, yeah. Big Bang, the IT Crowd, and Trailer Park Boys.
Oh, I love the IT Crowd too.
Those are my three. And Barry Kripke literally is one of the greatest antagonists in sitcom history because he's just so funny. And he talks about some of the lines that he got to actually come up with. And he does say one of the best lines ever uttered by a nerd, which is when I think it's Leonard tells him, well, he's, or maybe it's Wallowitz says he's, you know, it's over a girl and he's a nerd. And he's like, we're all nerds and can't get girls.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's kinda... I don't know. It's awesome. I was really, really happy to get to sit down and chat with him.
Yeah.
And literally we could have talked to each other for like hours, you know, nice. And at the end of the episode, you know, he was like, wow, that was awesome. And I was like, I'm just glad you had a good time. And he was like, yeah, it was great. So
do it again.
Why don't we just get into this? Do it. Welcome back to the show. Today it's super exciting because if you're like me and John, Big Bang Theory is my go-to when I'm sick. It's Big Bang Theory, the IT Crowd, and Trailer Park Boys. So if I'm sick and in bed, those are the three shows I'm watching. And
good comfort.
All I'm going to say is Barry Kripke is one of the funniest antagonists on a show like this. So I really, really appreciate it. John Ross Bowie, thank you so much. I don't know why you're here. You must want to kill your career for coming on Spoiler Country, but we appreciate it.
That was the idea. Yeah, I'm just going to really give this one a Viking funeral. Let me start by, since it's going to be a whole hour or so, I actually pronounce it Bowie.
Oh, Bowie.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep this in. Don't edit this. Don't go back and redo it. But just keep in this moment. I hardly ever correct anyone anymore, but I just feel like we're going to be talking for a while. And
yeah.
I actually, the it's funny. We're going to talk about my recent trip to the UK. When I go to the UK, they say Bowie right out of the gate. Oh, for whatever reason here in the States. Yeah, it's great. It's phenomenal. For whatever reason here in the States, it's Bowie, or if I'm in the sort of the Southeast or Texas, it's Bowie. But that's my Bowie. Father and his father, the Bowie's going back to Scotland, said Bowie. So
there you go.
I don't know. Take that under advisement, I guess.
My last name is Regan. And as soon as Ronald Reagan became president, no one could pronounce our last name. It was always Reagan.
Oh, right?
Yeah.
But you spell it R-E-G-A-N, right?
No, just R-E-G-A-N. So Reagan is R-E-A.
Yeah, that's, yeah, right. You spell it Regan.
Yeah.
That's Regan. I see that. I speak that's Regan.
Yeah, yeah. So I always have to go into the whole diatribe.
There. You put a rogue A and it's Reagan. That just makes sense.
Though I'm it's like I have to go into a diatribe too. And say, well, how do you spell reverb and reject?
Exactly.
So, you know, it's not reject.
Reject and reverb.
So, man, you're going to be on Feel Good, which is the May Martin show on Netflix right now. Season one finished up. Season two starts here. We're going to say late spring, early summer. I think that's fair to say. And you're in. How was the experience? What was it like working for Netflix?
It was great. I've done other things for Netflix. I was on a show called Love with Paul Rust and Gillian Jacobs, which was really
I love that
neat.
Show.
Yeah, it's great, right?
Yeah, it was really, really good. I was really bummed it canceled.
Art show. And this is a similar, this actually has a similar vibe in the sense of it's just this very thoughtful, very funny, grounded comedy. I went from not knowing who Mae Martin was to a sudden rabid fan to maybe even one of her friends now. It's been a real roller coaster relationship, but I auditioned over Zoom.
Yeah.
I auditioned just like this
with
her and her writing partner and one of the producers. And we hit it off wonderfully.
That's cool.
And then we went for this wonderful, once I got over to the UK, because they shoot it in the UK. Once I got over there, we went on this long walk along the Thames, you know, keeping our distance, obviously, because this was October. This was height of COVID. Everything was locked down.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh my God, how was London? And London was, it might as well have been Hartford. There was nothing going on at all. It was just, the architecture was absolutely beautiful, but you couldn't go indoors anywhere.
Right.
So we walked around, we just really hit it off, really had a nice time. And she's done something kind of strikingly awesome in the way she has created a fresh take on let's build a sitcom around this stand-up genre, which, you know, which goes back to you know, God, there's an argument that it goes back to I Love Lucy. It feels really fresh and innovative the way she's. There's a lot of interesting talk about sexuality and intimacy and commitment. And it got kind of lost in the shuffle last year in the States because Netflix released it on the same day as Tiger King.
Oh, man.
And America was just
right over it.
Yeah, which is a shame, but I think it's getting its due finally, and people are late to the party, but are enjoying it.
Yeah,
and you know this is scientific study, but when I announced that I'd gotten to do the series, a bunch of my friends on Instagram were like, oh, that's fantastic! I love that show. She's so funny. She's so talented. She's so charismatic. So yeah, I think I'm hoping that season two will do really good things for her because she's a huge talent.
Yeah,
and season two goes to some really interesting places.
You know, the funny thing about that show is that it's funny in a real world way. You know, nothing is like over the top where you're like, oh, that would never happen. No, it's like, oh, I've felt exactly how she's feeling right now. You know,
it is really remarkable how it manages to have a warmth and a kindness and a groundedness and still be laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
It reminds me sort of, my other big favorite from this past year was Ted Lasso, which I have nothing to do with. I'm just a fan. But in terms of once you get over the big jump of this American football coach going over to coach their football, once you get over that rather big suspension of disbelief, everything else feels firmly rooted in our world.
Right.
And warm and hilariously funny and smart. So yeah, it's been pretty neat.
That's cool.
It's been pretty neat being involved with that.
So when you're over there in the UK shooting, everything was locked down. So that must have been such an odd experience. Like
I've gotten to work in London a couple times and I love it over there. I really dig it. And I usually spend my time when I'm not working, you know, I'll blow it out and I'll go to the theater, which is really affordable and accessible over there. And there's tons of great stuff and there's so many great museums and there's so much history. And what I did this time was I would just Postmates Indian food and sit in my hotel and watch British TV. And I discovered this show that I'm evangelizing about that is not streaming here in the States yet, but it's called Portrait Artist of the Year.
Oh my God.
It's just that. It's a reality competition about portrait painters and the winner of each series gets to paint an athlete I have never heard of for a portrait that will hang in a museum I have never heard of. Oh, and that's it. That's the big prize. And the stakes could not be lower. So mind you, I'm over there in like, it was actually November when I was over there because we were figuring out the election here. Super stressful time. The whole world is watching us sort through our shit.
Right. And shit show.
The BBC just amused with us. And I switch over to Sky Arts and they're showing this wonderful show. It's hosted by Stephen Mangan from Episodes. Uh-huh. And it's the most relaxing hour of fixing paints and figuring out how to capture the shadows under people's eyes. And it could not be more low key. It makes the Great British Baking Show look like an episode of 24. It's so chill. It cannot stream here fast enough. People think I'm crazy. It is such a great show.
Oh.
If you have any way to pirate it, go ahead and do so. Because I
wonder if you can get onto the BBC streaming app.
You can't because it's technically Sky Arts. Which is privately owned. BBC is public. And the Sky app, we don't have the Sky Arts in any of our stores.
Yeah.
There's got to be a way. I'm sure if you're really diligent, you can find a way to stream it here in the state.
But right.
Portrait Artist of the Year is shit.
I want to watch it. I like there's something on Netflix that's being transferred over from England, and it's like this guy that has a warehouse or like a big ass barn on his property, and people just show up, and he's got a crew of people, and they're like, I got this old telescope that is on the side of the sea where people could put the quarter in, look, and we're hoping, you know, it's from the 1930s, and we're hoping you can fix it. And he's got like a group of guys that come out and they do it. And they have one guy brought a cane that his grandfather back brought back from India from when the British still ruled India, and it had a little monkey's head, and you hit the button and the ears flared out and the mouth opened up and down, and he wanted to get that fixed. And they, you know, and it's on Netflix right now. I can't remember the name of it, but it's so good. It's so funny.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's not funny, but it's just so relaxing. It's on the same way. Give me something to sit and just veg out on. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, these are trying times right now. I don't necessarily need to be in the edge of my seat. Need to be in the middle of my bed.
When you're not working, what is John Bowie up to?
These days?
Yeah.
A little this, a little that. A little of that. I'm doing like all like I'm doing a lot of the pandemic hobbies. Like I've been playing a lot more guitar. I've been making bread. I've been hanging out with my kids. I'm cooking a lot more, which has actually been a little bit nice. My wife is writing on a new ABC show called Rebel.
Cool.
With Katie Sagal and Andy Garcia, which has been great, but she's been really big at that. She's on set right now wearing, you know, six masks, face shield, giving muffled notes to Peg Bundy. But so I've been sort of, when I'm not working, because I've been doing, I did Feel Good, and I've been working on this show called Generation for HBO Max, which is going to come out. That I can say firmly comes out on March 11th.
Cool.
Which has been great. But when I'm not working on those, I'm just sort of house husbanding, which has been kind of cool. You know, I had 3 years of fairly steady work with Speechless and The End of Big Bang.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, and this is not just me trying to put a happy face on the twilight of a career. It's been really genuinely nice to be home more and just hang out with the kids and sort of cooking with them a little bit. And, you know, it's been really hard for them. My kids are 13 and 11, and this should be like a real social butterfly time for them. And it isn't, which has been tough. But my son's teaching me to kick ass in Fortnite. My daughter started playing bass guitar, so we can hear her sometimes in the other room working on stuff. So that's exciting.
How'd you get into bass guitar? I always found
she picked it.
Really? Usually people evolve to it.
Fun to pick up. Yeah.
Like, I want to play guitar, and then it's, I want to play drums, and then it's, okay, well, bass. I mean,
if she's anything like me, she recognizes it as the shortest route to getting into it, which it is, you know. How can I be in a band but not have to learn chords? I have just the thing, you know. So she's into that, Goblin. She shares her father's intuition. But it's been fun. Yeah, she's in there trying, and she's got really random taste, too. Like, there's a lot of Beatles.
That's
there
cool.
And then there's a lot of newer stuff that I'm just getting familiar with. So it's been kind of fun watching them make the best of their ample amounts of free time.
Dude, I got to tell you, speaking of music, I didn't know that you played guitar and was able to sing and do all that until I saw you in Speechless playing Jimmy DeMaio. And I'm really kind of bummed that that show's canceled. Minnie Driver was fantastic. The kids were amazing. I thought that show showed that you could lead a comedy show, a sitcom with Minnie Driver. And Minnie, I thought Minnie was amazing. I mean, I loved her since I ran a video store in the 90s. And so when Circle of Friends came out, that was a sleeper hit, like a cult sleeper hit.
Yeah.
And then when you saw her do other movies, I'm like, oh, that's Minnie Driver from Circle of Friends. That's how I always see her still to this day. Sure. And so to see her do Speechless, and just to see how well her comedic timing is was awesome and so much fun. And you guys played so well together.
She's a really gifted clown.
Yeah.
She really is. I had played her boss on a couple of episodes of About a Boy. So I came in knowing a little bit about her skill set in that regard. And of course, she'd always been kind of broadly funny on Will and Grace,
right?
Where she really got to kind of be goofier than usual.
Stretch those chops.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I was not a video store employee in the 90s, but I was a frequent video store customer, and it is not lost on me, like, how crazy it was that I had excellent, excellent comic chemistry with the chick from Good Will Hunting. Don't think that, like, I'm so jaded in my career that I was not really pleasantly surprised that me and, is it Skylar? Is that the character's name in Good Will Hunting?
Yeah,
I think so. That we just hit it off and like it just made sense on camera.
Yeah.
But both her son is between the ages of my kids. Henry is 12 and my kids are 13 and 11.
Right.
And
right there.
We'd had a few play dates and we had a few hang times. And I think we had very similar parenting philosophies.
Yeah.
And the whole cast was great. I mean, Mason, Micah, and Kyla, Cedric is a gift. You know, it's I have had a lot of people bemoan the canceling of that show. And obviously I was super bummed. But to do 63 episodes of a really smart, funny show on a network is no easy feat nowadays. So I'm gonna you know, light a candle rather than curse the darkness.
I'm really
proud of the work we did. And there was the day thing. When I was in London, it's still round the clock on E4 over there. And you can occasionally get yourself a horrific John Roth-Bowie double feature because sometimes it follows one of my big bangs.
That's awesome.
You can get like more Bowie than you could possibly ever want.
Oh, that's awesome.
From like 10 a.m. on E4 in the UK, which was striking.
That's hilarious. When you worked on that, you worked with John Cleese. What was that like? One of the greatest comedic actors of all time. If I'm looking down and you see me looking down, I apologize. Is that my camera's up, but you're down?
No, I figured it was talking about
okay.
that. I figured it was. I'm not the least bit offended.
Good. I just didn't want you to go, look at this guy. He's not even paying attention to what I'm saying.
Also, not a visual medium, so I wasn't going to comment on it, but knock yourself out. You know, draw attention to it if you must. Oh, this is so weird. You just went out of focus, or I went out of focus. One of them went out of focus for a moment.
Oh, that might have been.
Anyway, was a dream.
Was he really?
He was awesome. He really was. You know, I'd heard like he could be a little cantankerous, and you know, he said some things politically over the years that I don't jive with, but if you're going to, you know, say things that I disagree with politically, the least you can do is be a complete icon otherwise. And he was, and he was playful, game, and he liked the script.
Nice.
And he said a couple of nice things to me. And I don't think we were actually shooting, unfortunately. I think it was just during a rehearsal where I cracked him up. So I don't think there's actual footage of him, of me making John Cleese break,
right?
But I have it in my heart and I remember what it looks like.
Right.
And it was a real career peak for me. What's interesting about Cleese specifically in how it relates to Speechless is there's an amazing quote from Cleese about Python. And I was absolutely one of those, like one of those Gen X white kids who could actually quote Holy Grail and Life of Brian backwards and forwards.
You can't count to five without doing the whole, it is three, it is not four.
Absolutely. Three should be the number of accounting. And there's absolutely, it's not my sexiest quality by a damn night. But so I'm hugely familiar with his oeuvre. The first time I visited my now wife in her apartment, she had a Fish Called Wanda poster up in her apartment. I was like, I got to make it work with this woman.
Yeah.
I have to make it work with this woman. But he said something amazing in an interview years ago that I've taken to heart is, when we started Monty Python, we thought comedy was watching people do funny things. And then the second season, we realized that comedy is watching people watch people do funny things.
Right, right.
And you take that and you look at that in the larger context of his work, and that makes you realize that the famous Black Knight sequence in Holy Grail is just as much on Graham Chapman's shoulders as it is on Cleese, playing the guy who is clearly losing a sword fight but refuses to give up. But it's Chapman is us. Chapman is the voice of reason saying, you're out off. And the moment of Terry Jones being really uncomfortable that Eric Idle is asking him all these personal questions about what sex is like, and nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You know, all of these sketches rely on a crazy person and a voice of reason. And I had taken that to heart while doing Speechless, because so much of Speechless was me being surrounded by wackiness and sort of my foot on the ground being the straight man, being the audience's proxy.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not just a fan of Cleese. He has shaped my worldview and how I approach what I do for a living. It was
amazing.
Pretty seismic.
That's awesome. You know, my favorite scene in all of Speechless is the scene where you guys refuse to clean up the yard and you go and you meet the neighbor for the first time. And then you tell your daughter, basically for no uncertain terms, because I can't remember the exact quotes, is you're the assholes of the neighborhood. You're not going to do the, you know.
We're not jerks. We're idiots.
Yeah. Oh,
that was my, that was when the show really started. That's, I think, only our second or third episode. Yeah. That's when the show made a very loud sounding click for me. That's when I was really like, oh, I see what we're doing here, because the neighbor gets annoyed with us.
Yep.
For not cleaning up our yard, and she lashes out at him by ordering like a bunch of prank pizzas for him. And I'm like, no, that's not what we do. That's a jerk move. We're idiots. Be careful. And it was sort of the show leading with its governing philosophy.
Right. Right. It kind of like set the tone for the rest of the series, right?
It really did. And I had to give a speech at one point. It was my first big speech on the show where I lay down the whole deal about, we had a snake when we moved in. We don't know where it is now. If we receive your packages, they will become our packages. Laying down the rules of what it's going to mean to be a DeMeo.
A neighbor of the DeMeos.
Yeah. And Kyle is so good in that episode. Ugh. I don't know if you're watching Mr. Mayor. He's killing it on that.
Oh, she's
right
great
now.
as the mayor's daughter. Yeah. She's killing it.
She is an enormous talent. I'm a huge fan. But like anytime I got to work with her was a delight. And that was our first time kind of having scenes one on one. And yeah, she was really, really fun to work with.
How much joy or maybe how much frustration and how much like learning and being able to build how you kind of incorporate yourself into the acting career does the Upright Citizens Brigade give to you?
A lot. And it's funny. I was just talking about this with my wife yesterday.
Nailed it.
Because that's how we met. Yeah. Nice question. Well timed. We did not do a pre-interview. There's no way you could have known that. Listener at home, this is a happy actor.
I got my bat right here. I'm just trying to hit him.
Absolutely. I met my wife at the Upright Citizens Brigade where we were taking improv classes, and it has changed everything. I mean, it changed my life in a very tactile way, in that it made me decide I wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
And it was becoming the hot comedy place in the late 90s, and casting directors and agents were coming to see. And that's how I got my first commercial agent.
Yeah.
And that led to some very tangible benchmarks in this thing that I'm going to straight-facedly call a career. But it also, it led to something else in terms of, you know, you do so much work for free at a place like that.
Yeah.
And because they don't, and there's some controversy about this that I'm not going to touch, but we were never paid, but we got free stage time in a city where free stage time is not easy to come by.
Right.
So we take these classes, or we would intern to pay for these classes, and then we'd get up there and we would do our thing. And it made you, it's a cliche to say it, but it made you part of an organism, part of an organization that where you had to rely on each other. You had to have each other's backs on stage, and it made you, it took away your sense of entitlement. And it made you a little less precious about things sometimes. Yeah. So, you know, you're not as, you know, you've got this one joke and you're really, really proud of it. And someone shoots it down and you're like, okay, we got to go on to the next one.
Right.
All right. You know, creativity is a renewable resource. Let's keep going.
Right.
So I think if I'm not an asshole on set, and I really try not to be. I've got a pretty decent reputation. I think a lot of that comes from UCB and that sense of camaraderie that we built coming up with guys like Rob Corddry and Jamie Danbo and Donna Furman and Danielle Schneider and Rob Hubel, Paul Scheer, all those guys who were in and around my generation and who've all gone on to, not had day jobs.
Yeah.
You know, who've gone on to consistently qualify for insurance, which I think is a phenomenal benchmark in this business that I've got the SAG health plan for 19 years running. I win. Yeah. I'm going to go to the dentist just for kicks. But it really, it helped my whole philosophy around this business. And I think it has made me just very grateful and really appreciative.
Yeah,
but also if a joke isn't working, I'm not the person to run up to the writers and go, "Ugh, this isn't working, fix it." I'm the person to go up to the writers and go, "Hey, let's work on this thing.
Yeah.
I have a couple of ideas. Let's hear yours. Perhaps we can come around to something here." There was an example one time where it was super late at night, and I don't know if you remember, we had a running gag on the show where we had a bunch of things written on the wall that were dead to Maya, things that Maya simply did not like.
Right.
And they were up there for the entire run of the series. They went on in like episode 5 and they just stayed up there for the entire run, which was one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
And we would add and take things away and scratch things off. But there was one thing where they put, one of the writers put ska. Maya hates ska. And Minnie goes, here's the problem. I'm in my 40s. I'm from Britain. We all love ska. It becomes an entire extra story if this British woman who was born in the 70s doesn't love Madness, doesn't love right. the Specials, doesn't love Bush Beat. That's a complete outlier. And oh we didn't like just throw it out. We were like, okay, how do we fix this? How? And I think it was actually me who pitched it. I was like, how about 90s ska? What if we make it like you like the stuff that you grew up with, but once it got kind of went pop and the Boss Tones came in and there was sort of a weird pop punk influence, maybe right. that's it.
Fishbone.
And the joke ends up with her going 90s ska, and Cedric goes, what did 90s ska ever do to you? And she goes, ruin the 90s. And, you know, the point of that incredibly long story is just that, you know, it makes you a collaborator. It yeah. makes you a fixer before you're a complainer.
Yeah.
And it was really, and that's absolutely UCB coursing through my veins when moments like that come up.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you went to Ithaca College, right?
I did.
And your parents are, you're lucky enough to be able to go to college, and you come home and you tell your parents, I'm going to do the Upright Citizen Brigade and I'm going to be an actor.
What's, oh, it's so much worse than that. Oh, dude, it's so much worse than that.
I got to know. What was their reaction?
What I did first was I led them on for a year. I came back from college with a degree in English and education.
Okay. So you're going to be a teacher in their mind.
Yeah. I went back and I got a job at my old high school teaching. And I mean, that's like, you know, hi, don't mind me, guys. I know that cost a lot of money, but I'm about to go into the noblest profession
this
that
sounds
exists.
Like a sitcom.
And here's why it's even more of a sitcom, because of the way they pay New York teachers. I lived with my mom for that year. So I'm living with my mom, going back to my old high school, but this time I'm teaching instead of yeah. a student there. I do that for one academic year and it breaks me like a twig. It just absolutely cracks my spirit in two. I am not cut out for that job, at least not at that age. I right. was 22.
That means there's very boyish kids that were in junior high, middle school that were going to school while you were like a senior. And now you're right. teaching them.
Huh? That's correct. One kid was like, hey, I was in your gym class when you were a senior. I'm like, okay, that means you've been here for 6 years. Don't brag about that. But yes, it is true. I remember you in my gym.
Oh, that is awesome.
So that was a mess. So then I go, okay, I got to quit teaching. Yeah. I'm way too young for this job. I look like a senior in a tie. The kids are actively mean to me. I'm only 5'8". I am not equipped for this right now. So then I move out awesome. At least, but I start a punk rock band.
Yeah.
And punk rock band puts out its own records and there's no parent in the world. I don't care if you're Billy Joe Armstrong. Nobody's parent is like, excellent. My son plays bass in a punk band. And then the punk band breaks up. And then meanwhile, I have one cousin who is starting pre-law at Holy Cross when this is going on.
Oh,
and
great. A golden child.
I go, okay, my punk band is broken up. I'm going to start taking improv classes and we'll see where that takes us. So I really, bless my parents' heart. They're both gone now. Yeah. But they really, I took them on a real roller coaster in my 20s and was able to pay them back.
That's for amazing.
Untold amount of loans. Yeah. And it all worked out and they got to see me make a decent living and support a family. So it all came out in the wash, but I took them on quite the emotional roller coaster throughout my 20s.
I love it. They saw you on like the Big Bang. Cause that was, do you consider Big Bang your big breakout?
The short answer is yes. I think that doing a show with a reputation as large and as sprawling as Big Bang
yeah.
has definitely opened doors that were not open beforehand.
But
there's an argument to be made that the very first sitcom I ever booked, which was a show that nobody remembers called AUSA from 2003.
Yeah.
You know, that was a break.
Right.
There were little things along the way that like helped me, you know, rung by rung, but Big Bang was a big shift. And then Speechless was a really big shift.
Yeah.
And there definitely felt like, a way, you put it in very stark video game terms, because I know what podcast I'm on.
Right.
It felt like a definite level up. You know, it's like that moment where you turn the corner and the game auto saves and you've got a couple new weapons and, you know, your outfits get a little fancier. That's kind of what Speechless felt like, you know. And I'm not, I'm not cruising around in a Tesla or anything, but it's definitely opened up some more doors.
Well, I would imagine that you had more say of how you wanted your character to be in Speechless than you would have in Big Bang.
Yeah. I definitely did. Well, Big Bang, I came onto that show about a year and a half into its run. And anytime you do guest work, it feels very much like you're hopping onto a moving train.
Right.
And if you want to view me as a hobo to extend that metaphor, you're welcome to do so. There's a real sense of this thing knows what it's doing. This is a finely oiled machine. I'm just going to hop on and try not to fall off.
That's going to be the title of the show. John Ross Bowie, professional hobo.
Yeah. No, it really, so much of guest work is that, you know, so much of guest work is just everyone knows each other. You go in and you just try to, you know, find your footing. But fortunately, everyone on Big Bang, and I've said this before, and it's going to sound a little canned, but it's true. That cast was made up of people who had either been at it for a really long time and recognized that jobs were rare to come by, like Galecki and Kaylee, and everybody else was on their first big break. And then they brought in Mayim, who had taken 10 years off to get her advanced degrees and was coming back to acting for health insurance. So everyone on that show recognized what rare air they were breathing.
Right. That's cool.
And were very appreciative. And a lot of them had done a lot of work beforehand. Like Simon had a bunch of recurrings in different places. And Jim had popped in on a judging Amy and here and there, but he had never been a series regular before. Right. So they kind of understood what I was going through, hopping on as this very brash, big character. So they were super welcoming and they're good folks. I owe Galecki a call. Actually, this reminds me, I should call Galecki. Nice. I said I was going to come about a week ago and I should call him.
Yeah. Tell him I said,
fine
hello.
Young man.
I'm sure he'll remember me. I met him.
I absolutely will.
When you read the script and they said, you got to do the speech impediment, what was your first reaction?
My first reaction was it was not actually in the script. It was something that was sprung on me at the audition. The character as written was just this alpha nerd bully.
Yeah. Super bully.
And I came in and played him as such with just sort of this sort of crotch first posture and this guy with this completely undue sense of confidence.
Yeah.
And I think they rather wisely suggested that he have some sort of vulnerability. And this all happened in front of me. This was Chuck Lorre and Bill Prady and maybe Lee Aronson just sitting on a couch in front of me going, he should have some sort of vulnerability, maybe a speech impediment. Bill Prady suggests, maybe something like what Tom Brokaw has, that kind of liquid L.
Yeah.
And I, you know, ever the eager to please actor was like, yeah, absolutely, I can do that. It's sort of a subtle liquid L. You got totally it. Did. And instead, you know, this Elmer Fudd things comes out. And I got the job that night. I went to work the following morning.
You know, I laugh so hard because I had that speech impediment when I was a little kid. When I was in when I was in elementary school, they actually sent me to speech classes just to work on my.
And your last name is Regan.
Yeah, yeah.
And your last name is Regan. That's right.
My first name is Ken Rick. So Ken Rick Regan. It was terrible. Yeah, and I had to do speech impediment classes, and I'll never forget this. Mm-hmm. This lady, she's probably a wonderful human being. Let's just preface it by that. Because she's doing the Lord's work when you think about that. She's dealing with kids that have, you know, impediments. And she's got to try to get this fourth grader wrangled in. And I was not picking up the R's. She finally one day just completely lost it on me and said, if you don't learn these, be able to speak correctly and enunciate and say these R's in a way that people understand what you're saying, you will amount to nothing in your life. And I started bawling. I went home. I told my mom. She pulled me out of that right away. And then, but you know what? It was a catalyst because instantly, within a month or two later, my R's were perfect.
That's so interesting. You know, what's funny is considering how long I, you know, 11 years of showing up on that show two or three times a year, I got very little pushback about that character, because there's an argument to be made that he is, you know, a lot of the jokes came from his inability to pronounce words, but I think what helped it is that despite that, he's never a victim.
That's exactly right. Even when they made fun of it, and the fact that he flips it on Sheldon, are you making fun of my speech? And then is able to push that into Sheldon's face. I mean, you were never a victim, and I think that makes a huge, huge difference.
I think that was what did it, and I think that's what, and I think that also translated philosophically over to Speechless too. Yeah. And by the fact that they made, instead of making JJ this like perfect little kid who happens to have CP, JJ could be kind of a dick sometimes.
Oh yeah, I loved it.
And there's a great episode where they find out he's just coasting through his classes because nobody has the nerve to fail him. And which was one of my favorite episodes. I don't even remember what I do in that episode, but that whole arc of all of these teachers who were like, no one wants to fail the kid who uses a wheelchair,
right.
Which I thought was endlessly raw and funny. But yeah, I think the reason that I would get fan mail from speech pathologists, which was baffling to me.
That is.
But no one ever seemed to get offended by it because he, again, was an alpha. He, you know, Kripke won most of the time, you know, until the bitter end when he doesn't get a Nobel. He does, however, step in to make sure the really bad guys don't get a Nobel.
Yeah.
And so it was a really interesting character to play.
Oh, they wrote him. I had such a dick. He was great.
Yeah.
They really was great. I mean, and just tear Leonard a new one when it was like, heard you ran 20,000 stuff with no usable data. Congratulations. Just like, who does that at work?
So obnoxious. There, and in the very first episode, he has a line where Kunal set me up with something, which was, oh, I asked where Howard was. I asked where Wolowitz was. He goes, he's depressed because he's sad and creepy and can't get girls. And they gave me what is kind of the line of the series. I don't want to give myself too much credit, but my line was something to the effect of, we're all creepy and pathetic and can't get girls.
That's why we fight and can't get girls.
And, you know, I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but it's hard to think of a more representative line for that series.
Nailed it. I'm glad to know that you made it through your career to a point that your parents, that you're able to do all that. I'm sure they're very proud of you, especially turning on the TV and there's their bouncing baby boy sitting there.
My mom got to come to a Big Bang taping.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which was really
fun. Yeah.
And was around for the first couple seasons of Speechless. And I think she got to realize that all those hours of letting me stay up late and watch sitcoms past my bedtime, you know, might have actually had some dividends. It's pretty hard to prove to your parents that watching Taxi and WKRP is foundational education. But
what's the best WKRP episode in your mind?
Well, obviously the Thanksgiving one with the turkeys. God.
I still cry. I watch that YouTube clip almost around Thanksgiving, almost every year.
It's amazing too, because they simply did not have the budget to show anything like that. So the entire shot is Les Nessman recounting what he's seeing. So that's always amazing. But there was an episode where somebody blows up the transmitter.
Yeah.
It's a terror attack, essentially. Somebody blows up the transmitter. And I just remember Les running through the newsroom, heading onto the air. He thinks he's going to go on the air, even though the transmitter's blown up. And they go, Les, the transmitter's blown up. And he goes, I know, it's my lead story. It takes off.
Dude, Les Nessman, Herb Tarlick was great. That guy was that character was so funny. But Les Nessman, dude, you know, WKRP and the news got, I mean, it was just, it's too much.
Oh my God.
These are lines that represent balls.
Running back, he's constantly injured.
Constantly
has his finger in a splint and they hardly ever mention it. But he's like got a Band-Aid over here or his finger in a splint or like a soft cast on at all times. There are so many good bits on that show. We worked with an actress who came on and played a mom on Speechless, actress named Kiva Jump, who was Gordon Jump's daughter. Gordon Jump, of course, being the big guy, Carlson. Yeah,
the big guy.
And she said that it was always sort of bittersweet. She had lost her father. Obviously, Gordon Jump is no longer with us.
Right.
She said it was always kind of bittersweet around Thanksgiving because the memes of her dad coming in with the greatest blow of any sitcom episode of all time, as God is my witness, I thought turkey could fly. By the way, if you don't know what we're talking about, if you're a youngster watching the show, WKRP Thanksgiving on YouTube will get you where you need to go, and you'll and it is it's a struggling radio station in Cincinnati, and they're about to do a top secret promotion that nobody knows about, and it goes horrifically wrong, and it is. The last 5 minutes of that episode are some of the greatest 5 minutes in the history of television comedy.
Easy.
No one will disagree with me on this. Wayne is not controversial. It's amazing.
All right, man. Well, we're 45 minutes in. I know you got to cook dinner for your kids. I got to do the same thing. John, thank you so much for coming out and hanging out, dude. This has been a pleasure. And we're back. That's right. We are back. Back in the saddle again. Well, I hope you guys really, really enjoyed that as much as we did making it for you. And if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, you got to go check out spoilerverse.com, because at spoilerverse.com, we have a plethora. Plethora is such a snobbish word.
I like it, though. It's a good word.
We have an obscene amount of interviews with amazing directors and artists of all walks of life, and editors and writers. And oh my God, are you a lover of comic books like we are? Then there's so many amazing people from the comic book world over at spoilerverse.com. And I highly implore you to go there and check it out.
Yeah, and while you're there, you can check out all the other podcasts on our network, like Bridge of the Geekdoms and Funny Book Forensics and Haphazard Adventures and Nerds from the Crypt and so many more.
Misery Point Radio.
Episodes all the time. Misery Point Radio has got a ton of great stuff out there. Go check all of them out. And check out all of the reviews and previews and articles we have going up every single day for you, every day on Spoilerverse.com, for you to check out, to read, and to love, and to like, and to comment. We have a store link. You want to help support the site? You do it two ways. One, go to our Patreon, which is just patreon.com/spoilercountry, or go to our store link in the middle of the site there and get a t-shirt, a face mask, a hoodie, something. Look fly as hell and help support the site when you do that, because we get a dollar or two. And, you know, maybe you want to talk to us. If you do, you can do it, you know, obviously on all the socials, but if you go to scpod.us/discord, you can join our public Discord server and come chat with us all day long.
I couldn't say it better myself, dude.
There you go.
You just mouthed out a ton of information at once. And really, I hope you guys enjoy what you're hearing, because we're working our butts off to bring it to you.
We are.
I guess there's only one left thing. One left thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it. There's only one left thing left to do.
What's that?
In an oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. As Cthulhu compels you to do. Open the mind. And even more.